Good morning and welcome to the May 20th, 2024 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for attending and participating and reminding you to sign up to any electronic devices that you may have with you today. Today's meeting is a study and business session with a study session starting this morning at 10:00 in the afternoon. Business session scheduled for 1:00. However, if we can zoom through our agenda, we may get into our business agenda earlier than that. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to provide comments and ask specific questions after each item presented. Commissioners, help me and please remind me that if I forget to do that after each presentation. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided in the business session of our meeting. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand signaling that you wish to speak. When recognized, please come up to the microphone provided and state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have 4 commissioners present and 1 commissioner present on Zoom. We have Kirk Cudson, our general counsel manager, and Eric Walquist, general counsel, and Rebecca Newman, clerk of the board in attendance as well. At this time, would you please join Kate Taylor in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety, Human, and Organizational Performance Minute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
So, Kate, as you begin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Kate Taylor, I'm in Washington.
Hang on just a minute. Let me just get your thing shared there before you take that
right into the mic too.
Okay.
Without the prizes.
So, Kate Taylor, I'm in compliance and I'm on the licensing team. Before I came to the district, I worked at the JV and consulting for a nonprofit organization. Did that for about 6 years, and then before that I was about 15 years in the hospitality industry or management. So anybody knows those never close, so it was really exhausting. So got out of that after a while. But yeah,
well, welcome and thank you for coming and presenting to us today.
Absolutely, thank you.
Sharing words of wisdom.
Yes, so as you can see, I'm going to present about proper lifting techniques. I guess another background about me, a little fun fact, is I used to moonlight as a professional organizer. So I did that for a little over 5 years. I still had my full-time job, but on nights and weekends, I would organize people's homes. My business was the Organized Owl. It was called that because I would swoop in at night and you're supposedly organized by morning. So, you know, who needs sleep, right? I was dedicated to getting clutter-free Wenatchee. Didn't really work out, right? But no, it was really fun. I'm very passionate about organizing. I unfortunately had to close my doors for many reasons, but mainly because I had some back issues and just from all the lifting and moving and shaking that I was doing. You can see here in these pictures, these before and afters. This is a storage unit I did, so I was constantly bending, picking up, moving. You have to touch basically every single thing when you're organizing just to see if you want to keep it or toss it or shred it or what you're doing with it. So I had to really evaluate that. Here's another example of a before and after. This is a garage I did, and basically poor client got rid of a lot of things. Didn't leave it much, but a lot of just constant, like I said, just constant moving, lifting, touching every single thing. And I think what I really realized was in the heat of the moment, I'm not thinking about how I'm lifting. I'm just touching it, moving it, what do you need to do? bending, moving. And so when I would get home at night, sit down for a little bit, there was times I couldn't even get back up. I pinked my back and, you know, couldn't even move. So I really had to evaluate that. So I'm going to give you some techniques about don't become me, right? I found this basically simple little image just to show you the proper techniques that we're all shown, right? That we all learn. You always hear like, lift with your legs, you know, like we've all told that's like stop, drop, and roll. But in, again, in the heat of the moment, we're not really doing it like we're supposed to be. I'll give you another hot tip about that in a minute. But a couple things that I didn't list on the slideshow was weight. So, you know, on like job descriptions, it will always say, you know, have to be able to lift up to 50 pounds. I'd say that's probably the max for most people, but anything over that, you probably want to find a buddy to help you lift it. Or if you're lifting over your head, to like say put something on a shelf, I think you just want to think about like lifting up any barbell or something. What would you pick up to like lift over your head or just doing your basic exercise? So like for most people, that's about like 20 pounds, I'd probably say. Another thing is like carrying. So like, yeah, you pick something up, but where are you going with it? So make sure that your path is clear for whatever your final destination is. Also, just keeping your body square. So that was a big thing that I did wrong all the time, was I was always like pretending like I guess I was a CrossFit star and just like center like I shouldn't be. So just always keep your body square, you know, they say on Friends, like pivot. Wherever you're hugging it to your body. And Kirk and I were talking about this too before, and there's apparently a lot of back strengthening videos that you can find on the YouTubes. So I was Googling them out and give you some good examples, but really there's a ton out there. So, you know, I'm not going to tell you which one to watch or do. And then the supplies, lots of supplies. In the end, I was wearing a back brace, and not so much for the pain, but really every time I wasn't lifting right, the back brace was telling me because it felt awkward. So in the end, I was just wearing that to really help me remember like, okay, you're not lifting right because this feels weird. So back braces are just like really good ways to remind you that you're bending weird. So in conclusion, just kind of challenge everyone when you go home to like think about what your brick projects are, what your chores are at home. I mean, even like for me, just like picking up my dog dish to feed my dog, I'm not, you know, you're just bending over to get it, right? You're not like squatting appropriately. So just thinking of something, like lift your legs doesn't work for me, right? So something that I tell myself is I come up with, I call it the athletic royal curtsy, because you know how they're always like, oh, yeah. Your Majesty, right? So I just like, instead of curtsying, I'm, you know, squaring up and keeping it straight back. So that's what I tell myself. You're welcome to use it, but you come up with your own saying. But anyway, just in the moment, we're not doing it. So I think that's the biggest takeaway for people. Just remember, your back's really important. Any questions?
Kate, I got to tell you, I was reading through the material in preparation for today's meeting, and what you were talking about resonates with me for a variety of reasons, but probably the biggest one was after you put the material, I went out into my garage and I looked at all the junk that 27 years accumulates, and I'm thinking, oh my God. And my wife has told me, when you die, your kids are going to have to deal with it, because yes. I'm not going to do it.
Thank you for
so, big question. What do you do when you declutter? Does it all go to waste management? What happens to it?
It really depends on what you're getting rid of. You know, some things are very valuable and you can sell it. There's people really some things are just not worth it. There's, I actually have a whole blog on sustainable, you know, how to get rid of paint, you know, take paint, probably sit down with that. You know, there's a lot of really good organizations like, you know, Closet, YWCA, they do like a whole thing for women trying to get job abuse, for, you know, so donating your clothes. Like, really, there's so many different places you can donate your things to. I'm a big donator, a big shredder. I say, if you can reuse it, obviously. Or, you know, your kids really don't want your stuff. I'm a part of it because, like, no thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Nice.
Thank you.
That might kind of followed up on H&OP minute ever, because I suspect people are interested in what she could do to help them organize things.
Management is recommending moving resolution 12 for the consent agenda. 11 is already there. Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon any request of the city commissioner. Do I hear any requests or additions to the agenda? Agenda stands. All right. So, Kurt, let's move into item number 3, CPO limit.
Okay, I'd like to invite Amanda Holliday up, and Lyle Moore is going to join her at the table. Amanda is the recipient of the April Thacker Personal Ownership Award, and had actually a number of great nominations. Amanda was selected for her work on a particular project up in the Lake Chelan area, and that was near the Yacht Club, where there was a substantial amount of work happening on a bulkhead, and she recognized that that is a critical part of our system, the underwater cable going across the lake and the close proximity. And so Amanda really took ownership of ensuring that the district's infrastructure was protected while that work was happening at the same time. And as you can imagine, sometimes things like this don't plan to spend a lot of time on something like this, but she did spend a lot of time on it, and we're thankful that she did, because that is a critical part of our infrastructure. And so, great example of if you see something, say something, and that's what Amanda did here. So thank you, Amanda. Any comments great. From the board?
You don't have to, man.
I'm thankful that I was nominated, but it was definitely a team effort in this. I staffed it to trickle down several people down to me. This was bigger than just a one person deal. I went back to my boss and said, we need to do something about this right away. And we compiled the team, and I made a meeting and started talking about it, and we kept going from there, going back and forth talking with the Yacht Club.
I'll just add that Amanda's ownership here and recognition of how critical an interaction was that we had with our customer and owner of their Lake Chelan. She I think saved a potential problem today or maybe in the future. And, we're just really proud of her. She's a great cornerstone leader. And, really appreciate her.
Thanks, Amanda. Appreciate your ready.
I just wanted to share one of the, it gives me a really strong, good feeling when I hear somebody being awarded for a job that they did and seeing a problem. And it seems to be pretty consistent in our utility. When you came forward, you said it was a team effort. Collecting and not taking the credit all for yourself, but those, and I think that really speaks highly of the type of leadership that we're cultivating. And it's great to hear you say that, to know that we have people that really appreciate everybody that's working around them and working together as a team. Thank you. So much.
Great. Thank you, and congratulations for the recognition. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Number 4.
Okay, I'd like to invite Casey Hall and Steve Wickle up. This is the Upper Valley Transmission update. You might recall had a project in the works for quite some time, rebuilding, at least planning to rebuild significant section of our transmission up over Stevens Pass. So Steve and Casey are here to give us an update of all the work they're doing.
All right, commissioners, Kirk, Steve Wickle, Transmission and Distribution Engineering Manager, Casey Holm, Project Manager. So I think I'm leading this off. Slide number two. Oh, I'm in control. I'm in control. Why we're here, so I'll provide a bit of history as the drivers for the project, review alternatives that we put the community in 2019, review a hybrid design then that we did in 2022 after the 2019 effort. Casey will then go over what we kind of learned through our design analysis now recently, comparison of the options, and then we are seeking board concurrence on a record. Next slide, please. So in the mid 1990s, the district planned to reconstruct the second 115 KV line up Fox Canyon into Plain. This was ultimately rejected by the community after quite extensive community outreach. In 2017, we consulted with HDR to identify areas on our transmission system that were most at risk of wildfire impacting those facilities. And this transmission line is at the top of that list. In 2019, then, to address the wildfire risk and the aging infrastructure, this line was built originally in the 1930s. We proposed two alternatives to mitigate that risk that are shown in the next slide, so I won't get into that right now. Extensive community outreach was conducted in 2019, again, rejected by the community. So the drivers for this project now in 2024 are fire hardening, aging infrastructure replacement, and system resilience. So the 2019 outreach, we had two alternatives. Alternative one was to actually reroute up Chumstick. That's the gray highlighted line. The first bullet in there is actually common to both. That far southern section at the very bottom of the page in yellow and red dots, that's common to both projects. And that was a complete rebuild from our Anderson Canyon substation up to where that line crosses the Chumstick Highway. And then in gray there, or alternative one, was a new transmission line routed up to Chumstick. We were going to abandon the original transmission line that goes through Sunnish Dead Horse Canyons and then connect from Plain. I don't know if you can see that very well. There you go. That's a new transmission line section from Plain to Lake Wenatchee. And that would create a complete loop from Anderson Canyon at the bottom, clear up to Coles Corner and up the summit. So that's kind of the optimal transmission reliability configuration there. That estimated cost at the time was $40 million. Alternative two, again, was rebuilding that southern section, but instead, bullet number two is to rebuild the Sunnish Dead Horse Canyon section there off to the left, clear up to Coles Corner in steel in its entirety. We also were going to rebuild the entire Plain Tap, which I don't have highlighted on here. It's from Coles Corner to Plain. And then it's construct a ring bus at Coles Corner. So a ring bus is a transmission substation that would greatly improve the reliability of the area during outages. So instead of doing looped flow, that would increase the reliability, but just to a slightly lesser degree than looped. And that estimated cost was also $40 to $60 million. So, as I mentioned earlier, that was actually rejected by the community as well. We did a lot of community outreach and it was ultimately rejected. Aesthetics and cost, the real big reasons. So, given the fire risk and the aging infrastructure and the fact that we really think we need to do something about this, we developed this hybrid alternative to achieve the fire resiliency, to replace the aging infrastructure, and to hopefully reduce the cost of the project. So this hybrid alternative starts at the bottom of the purple section. Rather than redoing that entirely in steel, we thought we could reconductor it and only have to replace, you know, maybe 50% of the structures. When you reconductor it, you put up thicker, there's a lot more tension, and some of the pole can't handle that tension. It would have to be replaced, but some of them likely could withstand that. The second section was the same, that red section, that is a complete rebuild in steel through Sunnage and Dead Horse Canyons. In blue then, rather than installing a transmission substation, we thought there could be some switching improvements made, falling short of its fleet substation, but would improve the reliability to those customers in Plainview, Lakewood, and Natchez. So kind of a cheaper option. And then in green, rather than rebuilding the entire plane tap, thought we could do a 2-mile section through our most critical fire risk area. So we came up with an estimated cost, kind of what order of magnitude cost, of $30 million for the save some money to get the cheap. That, turn it over to Casey.
All right, so I'm picking up where Steve left off. So started looking at this hybrid alternative in 2023 and progressed the design to 15% level so that we can really look at this work for the project. And then also, we discovered some things going through that design process, which I'm going to go over now. That we're recommending the tilt tie back for listening the drivers for this project, fire hardening, system resiliency, and replacing aging infrastructure. So to start off, I'll do the same run through just the second sections that were in the hybrid. We'll start with the Anderson Canyon Chumpstick section. So this is the purple section that Steve talked about, the hybrid that was a hybrid rebuild. We would rebuild some of the steel structures, reconductor, and replace only what was required to rebuild that steel. So going through that design analysis, you know, we knew this going in, but just to reiterate, every structure is going to have to be worked. So when you hang new conductor, it doesn't mean you just can replace the structures that are affected. You still have to get to every one of them to hang hardware, to string the wire. So you're going to have to establish access to each structure through this process. That's a sunk cost either way you go, rebuild the whole thing, or if you just rebuild half of it, you're still going to have to establish that access. Second thing we learned was the structures. We didn't know until we had done the analysis on how many structures were actually impacted. So of the 70 that are in this line section, there's actually 38 that need full replacement and 13 that would need a significant rebuild. So that would be new cross arms, new X braces. So doing a lot of work to those other 13 structures other than replacements. Of the 33 that remain in wood, there's only 18 that are, or excuse me, there's 18 of them that are over 40 years old. So our benchmark is 40 years for a transmission structure. We have a lot of them that last longer than that, but that's just the benchmark we use for replacement. And then also, we're moving to a steel structure standard instead of a wood structure. So this would fall in line with what our standards are for moving to steel.
Casey?
Yeah.
Does the benchmark change once you put steel in? Is it a longer benchmark than wood?
Yeah, and 100 years for a steel pole.
That's a big item.
Yeah, big difference.
Casey, I have a question. You might have mentioned it earlier when we picked it up with the reconductoring. What are the advantages of reconductoring? That's a fire prevention.
So the process. No, it ties back to the aging infrastructure. So it's old copper from the 30s.
From the 30s. I can expand on that a little bit too. So that copper conductor doesn't have very much capacity, especially in the heat. So back in 2018, if you recall, the 2018, 2022, whenever we had 118 degree temperatures, that line is only rated to 120 degrees maximum. And that's without any current flowing on it. So at that moment in time, when the temperature is 118 degrees, you can hardly have any current flowing on that. You know, as current flows through any conductor, it produces heat. So we only have 2 degrees to work with, essentially. So we're just growing, and with the intense heat that we have, that copper conductor is no longer capable of really providing that power in those extreme heat scenarios.
You mentioned the fact that you're tightening the wires, it's just tighter.
Yeah, so when you go through in construction, there's certain sags that you pull that wire to when you're finishing up after you, before you cut it, which is tying it in here.
Yeah,
through the process, you're going to pull the conductor and see it fly in with the string, you know, helicopter can fly in a smaller rope and then pull in full ropes, pull your conductor in. So working each structure, you've got to get to them with a traveler. They call it basically just conductor runs through, pull that conductor.
But you said you didn't need to replace all the poles with steel.
Correct. Correct. If hybrid alternative, we could just go in and replace the 38 and upgrade the 13 and leave the remaining 33 for the one.
Just steel the key location.
Just back to the design, when we ran the analysis on the design, they were either overloaded, there was too much sag in the line for clearance requirements, and those require us to buy them. Those 33 may meet the requirements.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Casey, sorry to interrupt, but I've got a question for you as well, and that is with respect to the height of the structure. Is there a height difference between steel and wood structure?
Not typically, if you're not, you know, you're required to go higher, but we're meeting or just a standard requirement. It's in the transmission department for heights of the pole and what's dictated by NDSE. So we don't go taller than that unless there's a specific situation.
So what is
It ranges between 60 to 80 feet, I think, in this section. 80 to 90 feet is about the tallest we have with wood poles. We go taller to steel, which I'll talk about a little bit more in the next section.
Okay, I was going to ask if we're able to get above the height of the trees that might be prone to fall over the line. So if you're probably.
One more question before we let you get back. Assuming that we replace part of the pole, not all of the pole, how going back in at some point in the future, we have to ultimately be replacing wooden poles before we replace the steel poles. Is there an advantage to replacing them all now versus, you know, some and some?
Yeah, so I think I was going to talk about that. The biggest advantage is your fire hardening. So if we had a fire in that area, what we were replacing is not just a big section of steel and a big section of wood. It's just intermixed throughout that line. So if we did have an incident or some material, we burned down a couple structures. So I think that's the biggest benefit, is you're truly fire hardening that section. Working, you'd have to come back if we did replace them now. You'd end up coming back to replace those structures and just have to be established. You'd have that additional cost coming back in to build access to get to the structure and work that structure in the place with this skill. But it could be done later on. Awesome. Okay.
I'm probably going to come back to that question.
All right, so the next section I'm going to talk about is the change pole corner. So this is the red section that Steve talked about. Just to give you background on this piece, that's why we looked at going the opposite direction through the plane. Is this a very rugged, remote area in the middle of the forest on Forest Service property? So very difficult to get at. So in the hybrid alternative, we were looking at replacing this in all steel H-frame. And then the plain tap that Steve mentioned isn't shown on my drawings either. We also were looking at that 2 mile section, replacing it in steel. So we went back to look at the design for this section of line. We knew we were still going back at steel, but we wanted to look at other alternatives or other ways to reduce our, call it cross-section area, cross-sectional area of that line in this section to try to reduce. If we had a tree fall into the line, because it's a pretty narrow corridor, we only have about 100 feet of right of way through there, and a lot of forest on either side gets tall. So trying to get it, that corridor narrowed up and as tall as we could, we looked at going to a monopole configuration. So that's just a single pole instead of an H-frame. So what that does for us is it cuts the cross-sectional area in about half, instead of 48 feet for H-frame and two steel poles, you're just 24 feet with some arms. It also takes that conductor, instead of being horizontal, it takes it vertically on and stacks it. So you have two phases on one side, one on the other. So really trying to narrow up that corridor and help with going back to that, you know, tree fall, and then also maintenance to get our guys to work.
Make it a smaller, I mean, your corridor that you're going to have to, you know, open up and clear, it's going to be the same, if not wider. Is that correct? It's the same fault.
Yeah, so our corridor or permitted width is 100. So we're not that wide currently. Proposal of this project is the one that Eric bought that opens up to 100 feet in this section. But with that 100 feet, we would have a narrower cross section.
Okay, I understand, but I just want to make clear that we're not narrowing it.
No, no, we'd like to go wide. Yeah. So we also use the same configuration on the fleet tap section and replace that, all the lift structures with, and also full configuration. So something else we looked at through the design process was also, because of the reasons I mentioned earlier, being able to sense a fault quicker, being able to target, we had a fault where it was, so that if we kind of take crews in there, we could actually get having. Right now, it's a larger area that we have to go search. Actually, that's an inclement weather going in to do that. So pulling this newer technology in to try to help us with resiliency with this line, we wanted to look at it. And that is achievable through some new technology relays that are available that I don't have all the information on. But they can sense those faults earlier. They can also pinpoint fault on the line. But in order to do that, we need communication at the switch yard. Right now, we don't have that at Cole's Corner. We don't have the bandwidth in our network to be able to tie those relays in. So in order to do that, we would have to bring in fiber on this line in the form of what we call OPGW. It's an optical ground wire. It's basically a static line that runs above the conductor. And it's just an armored cable that has fiber inside of it. We've used the NEAT, the Crump Canyon transmission line. We used static OPGW, so we'd be doing recommending the same thing. And what that does for us is allow us to use that next generation technology for faults. What it also does, there's a lot of other benefits to it. Right now, if we have an event, you know, a fault, something that happens, we have to send crews out to go get that data now in person. This would give us that benefit of being able to skip that remotely, so we could pull it off the system through SCADA instead of having to go out, send the crew out to look at it. It also provide additional capacity and redundancy in our commercial system, so we could use some of those fibers in the Lake Wenatchee area. If we had a Beaver Valley Road, say we had an outage there, we could backfeed it from this location. And at the switch yard and substation up there at Cole's Corner, it gives us the opportunity to pull in security, like our access control, video surveillance, those things that we're trying to improve at our other substations out of sight like this.
Would you be able to put video surveillance on the remote areas on the line as well? Is that a capability of doing that in the future?
So we've actually talked about that. I don't know if we haven't explored it fully, but yes, that was something that we thought about looking at. On these remote areas, being able to pull video surveillance to see those types of things. So
yeah, is that figured into the cost in any way, or is it
not very useful? Okay. No.
Casey, there's that question. And this has to do with respect to the potential for undergrounding, since it's such a severe weather area. Is there any potential that this could be underground?
I would say no. I mean, Steve, you want to elaborate on
that? Yeah, we did underground 115 KV some years back, and it's incredibly costly. It's 3 to 5 times the initial cost. It's half the life. We're not tooled to do such things. It's incredibly expensive and very difficult. Also, through mountainous terrain, and there's all sorts of thing that has to be installed. You know, these cables, because they're big and heavy, and they want to pull. It's it's underground in 115 is okay in the city. It's, you know, level, it's underneath the road, and it's just done when the road is reconstructed. But it's just nothing that Chelan PUD would be able to do. Plus, the time to repair is, you know, weeks instead of just a day to go out and repair something because of the tooling required and specialty training, etc. 115 kV is just not feasible for Chelan to underground. Thank you.
All right, so back to this alternative, or this section alliance alternative from the hybrid. We're recommending that we do like a bolt configuration. Will mentioned that that's actually cheaper than an H-ring because it's less material. You have two poles and cross arms. It's one pole. Yes, yeah, built steel. PGW. Okay, the last section Steve talked about was the fourth corner switch yard. So the original hybrid, you had mentioned that we were looking at doing some upgrades to the circuit switchers up there, or bring circuit switchers instead of doing a full ring bus, sub switch yard, substation, fourth corner. Through the estimating in the early design, we found the cost for those circuit switchers have increased dramatically. In the last few years from when we put the estimate out for this hybrid. And it's very comparable now to a ring bus configuration, about, you know, showing $1.2 million difference between the two. There's a lot of challenges with circuit switchers. They're difficult to maintain. They're in the air, so you have to have equipment to work on them. They're mechanical. They don't provide any of the connectivity back to SCADA or remote controls. They're all in field. They're slower than a gas circuit breaker as well. So just a lot of challenges. I mean, it's old technology coming in and just replacing it with old technology. The ring bus allows us all those benefits we were talking about on the fiber side. We could bring in those newer technology relays. You know, the breakers are faster. We have a lot more flexibility. They're on the grid. A lot more flexibility and resiliency brought into those taps come into there, having the ring bus configuration for outages. So we're recommending that we actually go back to the ring bus from the circuit switcher that was originally played. Similar to what Steve talked about on this, the history, I'll go through the history on the cost for this project. He had mentioned that our original public outreach, we had the two alternatives, one and two, that were in the $40-60 million range. And then we came back based on the feedback to try to cut things down and reduce costs. And we were at about $30 million wrong in 2022. So we've come back with this design and done our estimates with what this base hybrid alternative would cost the district. And it's in the $50-51 million price range. So that's just the base one that we looked at earlier. So for the things that I walked through on the line alternative, we're recommending that we add those improvements that really tie back to those drivers for the project, the hardening, the resiliency on the system, replacing aging equipment. If we go back and add this extra $6 million to get to that, this $57 million. So that would be all the alternatives that we have to do. Then,
all the alternatives at 57, that includes all of the poles of MEC.
Yeah, so they're just highlight what that go back. In the Anderson Canyon, there's a chumstick section that would be fire hardened. Do it all in steel now. Don't do intermittent replacements. We can do that for the poles corner to chumstick. We were planning on hardening that. It will still be the same thing. Just do it in monopole configuration. You know, add a static, do it as a communication, not bold. And then thirdly, do the full ring bus instead of it. Yeah. That would be covered in that. The awesome. Next step, so I know we're seeking board concurrence on this recommendation. So we plan to include that in 2025 budget season during the normal business cycle. We're also planning this to be our first progressive design build. We're looking at going to alternate delivery with this project. So we'll be back later this summer with a request to advertise for an RFQ, RFP, so request for qualifications, and request for Burns to be able to finish the design on this project. We would like to do an early advertisement in June with the permission just to get, and that's just the notification out to the teams. It's time to start with the people, the design team, team web, the contractor, to the service.
Can you go back? And maybe I didn't understand exactly the answer to Amy's question. Does it still leave us with those 33 poles in Woodward? It replaces all of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, replace.
Okay. That was my question. My concern.
But when do you figure the completion date? I mean, I always ask me to start, but I actually, the completion is the question.
Yeah, I think it's, it probably comes at 28, looking at the RFP process, getting a design builder on, it takes time. So we'd be going through that process the rest of this year, probably in early next year. And then the work windows that are tied into with Forest Service, this section of that, this red section is also 7 miles of it, pretty much is, it's all Forest Service property. So we've got to work underneath the operating plan. There's work windows that we can work in that section of line. So that's going to draw the time out further. But it's, I definitely see it in a couple of phases.
Well, then it wouldn't be unreasonable to assume that they're part of the increase in this cost time, because we don't know what that, you know, costs are going to be dealing with all that kind of thing. And so, they have already been building some part of contingency in this report that we can improve on. Maybe with the expectation that you will be coming back, probably with some sort of an adjustment. I mean, and typically with that, some of it goes out that long.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you really hold anybody to the fire as far as cost?
I agree. Well, we have contingency in the number now, but as we move through progressive design, now, that's one of the good things about IC benefit of a progressive design builder is it's, you know, we started at a design level and then worked through these gates with them design and get a peek at what that cost or not peek, but full open book, what those costs are at a 60% design level and for construction level before we sign that the contract for them to work.
But even with that, something that goes out that long.
Yeah, what we've seen.
Okay, so we need to be listening to you with both eyes open and ears and understand what the circumstances are in product systems.
Okay. Can you go to the appendix slide, Casey? I appreciate the comment, Commissioner Bergeron. Go to the next one, because I think this is the number that you're, is this the number you're talking about? So just since the presentation started, I think that 57 million should now be 58 million. To your point. Because the bottom is 57, 5 or 6. And well, and so just wanted to point out that would be the number that you would see in the, when we do the budgeting process, it'd be more the 58 million and then whatever we might have learned. And I appreciate your point. And given that this, we are coming in with a contingency that is higher because of the uncertainty, it's 40% at this point. Don't know if that's going to be enough, but we've tried to consider the amount of time it's going to take to build the line and then the volatility and material costs and labor costs, but hopefully that'll be enough, but it's possible that it might not be.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, excuse me, I've got a question with respect to utilizing the monopole. format. What is that going to provide for future growth, future? If we're talking about putting poles in that might last 100 years, is that more efficient in the long term than going with a different setup?
Yeah, I can attempt to answer that. So we can design, it's really conductor spacing and conductor sizing that dictates the capacity on that transmission line. And so we could just design monopole or H-frame structures to accommodate what's needed there. And did so in this case. The planning engineers that we have done studies and forecasts out. We're installing a conductor size on there that's more than enough for our anticipated future need. We also export power on that line over to Puget Sound Energy. Right now we have to open up that line because it gets too hot from the existing conductor. So we stop that export so that it cools the line down and still serves our customers. So this will allow that to not have to open up like we do now under standard operating standards.
Questions or comments?
I would just, there's a lot of people in this room that have lost a lot of sleep over this line over the years. If the board concurs, this is I think a really good project to really build some resiliency into our system on a stretch that really does take a lot of care and feeding to try and keep running and keep up and providing the reliable service. So.
Again, on the line and the capacity, is this our primary east-west line to go over to the other side?
Nope.
No.
Good. No, we have lines out of Rocky Reach at 230 that provide that real east-west. This is mostly just to feed the communities along Summit and then on the other side, on the Snohomish PUD side. So it's not a lot of through power that actually gets on this line. Thanks.
Yeah, that's great. But I would just go so far. I think they're probably not, they're being very humble. They actually looked, I don't know where your question was going, but they did look at why we're doing 50-year visioning. Should we be thinking something different? So the team actually explored that concept. It would, of course, take another rebuild on the other side of the hill. The team did look at the possibility of that long range thinking and does this one make sense? And the conclusion, at least at this point, was that it would be somewhere else that the upgrades would to move power across. So,
great. Thank you. That was exactly where I was going.
Along those same lines, this rebuild stops at Lake Wenatchee or Cold Corner. From Cold Corner to the Summit, what are we looking at?
It's in our future. That line section usually gets us during the winter time to grow it. And so on this long pole, for some reason, that section just gets hammered with the trees a little more so than the sun is dead of our section. But it's more easily accessible. That line traverses along the highway better, unlike Sunich and Deadhorse, that would just be near impossible to get into.
Yeah, just one clarification. I did hear you say this line, if you're right, services the Snohomish PUD.
Yeah, it goes over and to Puget Sound Energy in Snohomish. It ends up at a Skagomish substation for Beverly Park substation, excuse me, over on the west
side. Does this line service any customers along there? Snohomish line?
Yes, there's a lot of little substations along the way, and that's primarily what this is for. And Puget Sound Energy, they're kind of in need. They own the other side of the line, and so they're in need of large power for data centers and things like that. And this little line and capacity is going to provide them anything. They're looking at 30 and 500 kV lines. They would likely not do anything with this line other than just maintain it for some time. I called on that, done some research trying to see what are you going to do with this? Is there a synergy there to work together on anything, and it just doesn't seem to at this time. So,
whether it's the Holmes County or PUD customer,
Or is it King County?
Or King County.
King County.
They service those through that.
Yeah.
Through that.
Commissioners are looking for the concurrence of their plan. I see your head. No, here.
Yeah, I think it's a great project and something. All our mitigation and utilizing all of the technology available to keep track of that line in the future. That's all.
Kept us in suspense. The 33 poles, I think. Heard something about presenting and keep it to the very end. So good job. You. Thank you.
I saw Commissioner Allen give himself to.
Thank you, Commissioner Allen.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Ready for the next one?
Yes, we are.
This is item number 5. This is our semi-annual commitment to provide you transmission policy updates. And with us is Daniel Apple and Steve Whittle.
Good morning, Commissioners. Daniel Apple. Steve Whittle, Transmission and Distribution Engineering Man. We're here today to give you an update on some transmission developments, both federal and state. And tie that into district practices and what we plan to do, hopefully moving forward here. So no action is required today. We're going to give it a brief update on the tariff that we have. Again, some quick transmission updates. There's been a bit of activity at that level of recent, and then just some other updates as well. So,
okay. So a real brief status on history. We've had under our tariff since we filed it, we've had 8 feasibility studies, 7 system impact studies, and 1 facility study, which is basically an engineering study. After they go through the 2 planning studies, they do an engineering study. And all of those have led to ultimately only 1 interconnection agreement. Yes?
People that might be listening to this recording, can you explain a minute or less of tariff?
Explain the tariff. Yeah, so tariff has our interconnection procedures. It's actually attached to the interconnection procedures, but it has our actual point-to-point transmission service rates or a network integrated customer rate. So it's just the rules by which we will treat transmission service customers, the different types of transmission service customers. It's open and transparent. And then also includes an attachment to the rates themselves that are published annually, and also interconnection processes and timelines, the cost, those kinds of things. It's all detailed out and followable.
The only other thing I would mention to that is that it has standard work agreements. If you want those kinds of services, it's not starting from a blank piece of paper. There's standard work agreements in it. But it provides that basis for providing services to the state.
Great. And then one last item, legacy transmission service. So we have 2 irrigation customers right now. Their legacy transmission service contract expiring soon. And so we're in discussions with them right now to actually provide transmission service to them under the tariff. And these will be the first contracts under the tariff soon they go forward that way.
One of those Lake Chelan Reclamation?
Yes, sir.
The other one?
Upper Columbia Irrigation District, which was the new name for Greater Wenatchee Irrigation District. Yeah.
All right, so FERC developments. Last summer, FERC issued Order 2023, and they affirmed that just a couple months ago with Order 2023A. And this changed the FERC pro forma
generation tariffs and procedures and agreements that they have. So now just a brief reminder that this FERC orders in the transmission space don't apply directly to the district. We're not bound by them because we're non-jurisdictional for purposes of transmission. Of course, FERC regulates us on projects, but that's separate from transmission here. And so these new rules that FERC applies would only apply to the districts if we chose to adopt them into the tariff that the board had approved previously. And we have historically followed a fairly similar process to what FERC has ordered, and it helps to provide some of that continuity and clarity that the customers can expect to see. All right, so getting into the specifics of okay, there we go. So the first three main areas that FERC decided to change in this new order, the goal, of course, being that FERC decided that the queues that were for these generation interconnection requests were simply taking too long to move through. And so they were looking at a ways to try and make that process more efficient so that actual transmission projects could be built, as opposed to just lingering in these queues for long periods of time. So historically, the way that it would work is that if you applied for transmission service, you go first in time. So you put your application in, you are at the top of the queue, and then as applications came in on the basis of time, you would be studied in that order. They decided to switch to who's gonna actually be ready to build first? And so they are opening this up to a cluster study process where they're going to study a bunch of requests all at the same time that will have the same priority. And those who are ready to actually take the next step will receive the priority status. And that also applies to an affected study system. So for example, if we were to study here and our study showed that Douglas PUD or BPA would be an affected system, previously the customer would have to go and contact that transmission provider and negotiate separately with them. This kind of bundles it all together, and there's another pro forma agreement, again, with the goal of trying to streamline this process and clip these things through the system as quickly as they can. So that's the first thing, first and ready, first serve. The second thing is it imposes deadlines on the transmission service provider, hard deadlines. Initially, it was kind of a best effort to do this as fast as you reasonably can. Now, FERC said that's not good enough. You have a fixed deadline, which, as I recall, is 150 days from the time that you have an application in. You have to turn out a study, or you start getting penalized, financial penalties on a daily basis. And so there are also, though, penalties on the customers requesting it if they decide to pull out. If they withdraw early, then because that changes the study parameters, then they are penalized for doing so. So again, the idea being that we only want serious actual projects in the queue so that those can be studied in advance to actual construction. And this third one here, the FERC wants to incorporate these technological advancements in the interconnection process, and I'm going to let you.
Yeah, just a real quick brief moment on that. I mean, these technological advancements are like dynamic line ratings. So I don't know if you've heard any of that, but where ambient adjusted, depending upon the temperature outside, the line ratings of the line will change. That is being put in motion right now by jurisdictional utilities. New advanced conductor replacement, rather than going with traditional conductors, there's more costly, but advanced conductors that allow more current. There are now projects underway to actually lift transmission structures up higher. It's called tower lifting, and that increases the capacity on the line, because as more current goes on the line, that conductor stretches as it heats and lowers, and that's actually what limits the amount of current that can go on a transmission structure. So if you lift those higher, the sag can go more, and you increase the capacity on there. So this the new FERC tariff requires that you evaluate those and other kinds of things. I just gave you a handful of examples there.
Yep. And so again, these don't apply directly to the district once we choose to adopt some of these same principles for our own tariff. And so what we plan to do is to come back again, bearing in mind that the purpose of FERC transmission tariff in general is to connect new generation into the transmission system to provide for that transmission service with the goal of connecting that new generation's work. And so What we're thinking of doing is kind of twofold. Number one is, as I mentioned here on the slide, we're going to come back to the board and recommend removing load interconnections from our tariffs, but we can focus just on generation, like for it, and we'll talk more about that when we come back in a couple of months, hopefully. And later, we're going to be recommending, we're going to look carefully at it and decide what we should, what to not adopt. Potentially these collector studies or some other examples like that from Berkshire to Omatura into our tariff and as appropriate, again, recognizing the circumstances that we have here. So that is FERC orders 2023 and 2023A. Just last week, in fact, a week ago today, FERC dropped a couple of new orders, which we haven't had a chance to look at because at least this first one here, 1920, has caused a bit of consternation out there. And again, these are directed at jurisdictional agencies. But this FERC order 1920, which was adopted along party lines, I think, by its commission, FERC commission, 2-1. So everybody's anticipating that there will be probably litigation surrounding this rule. But what it does is it requires transmissions look at a 20-year plan, transmission planning horizon. Everybody has to regionally plan to a 20-year time horizon. They have to update it at least every 5 years. And there's certain things that they have to study in terms of what that plan looks like and how they're going to pay for those costs. And so there's a lot of controversy around those new rules. And again, it's only a week old, so people are still digesting it. But I anticipate you'll be hearing more about this one in future updates. Then I'll just briefly mention Order 1977. There was a desire to parallel path both state and federal permitting for processing of these siting applications. And FERC rejected that and said, no, you need to go through the state siting process first, and then you can apply to federal under FERC. But nonetheless, FERC does have the authority or the power to come in and overtop states and allow siting in places where the state has said no, FERC would say yes for these large interstate transmission.
Because of our structure with local control here, are these two orders jurisdictional to us?
They're not. It's the same thing would apply. I would say not with an asterisk, only because, again, part of the whole process of having an OAT is there's transmission systems tied together everywhere. And so there's some reciprocity considerations for if we want to be treated a certain way, well, what does our system have for those who would come in? So in general, the answer is no. But again, as these rules become more certain, I think we'll be back and talking about them. Finally, just a couple of other things that happened recently-ish. This was last month. The U.S. Department of Energy adopted this name, which is a bit of a mouthful, the Coordinated Interagency Transmission Authorizations and Permits Program, or CTAP program. And essentially what its goal is to cut the time for processing all of the environmental permitting at the federal level from an average of 4 years down to 2 years. The way that they plan to do that is to have kind of a one-stop hub at Department of Energy for coordination of all federal permitting. What they have said, though, is that there's going to be no change in the quality of the environmental reviews, and there's no substantive change in the legal requirements. So they're just trying to do everything but just do it faster. It really let this program amounts to it. We'll see if it works. And then finally, at the state level, in this most recent budget cycle, there were two allocations. One was for $497,000 to the UTC, and this was just to better advance the state's objectives for planning, organized markets, and similar regional capacity. So haven't really seen exactly what that's going to be used for, but that's what they're hoping to achieve at the UTC. Secondly, there's going to be a workforce put together by Commerce to study the labor needs associated with the transmission workforce in the state. And so we intend to follow these. There really hasn't been anything yet in terms of setting up that workforce, for example, but we will be monitoring those and going back as quickly. So that is our presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Okay, I'd like to invite Chad Rissman up. This is West Wenatchee Substation Update.
Morning, Commissioners. So we're at a reaching a milestone here as we're identifying and narrowing in on a future substation site to better serve the West Wenatchee, sort of Northwest Wenatchee area into the future. We started this effort several years ago. When we identified that the growth pace was slowing in that area, we started reprioritizing, but we know that it's coming back. So we wanted to make sure that we didn't drop it, and we continue to move forward. So we're at a critical spot now, an important spot, and I wanted to bring the board an update. There's no action that's required, but obviously feedback, comments, and thoughts are always welcome. For Rebecca.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to go back to the need here. This is a really busy slide, but you're familiar with the area. Here. So right now we have Western Substation and this graphic built by Andy Dell is a great graphic. But this is showing kind of the service area for Western Substation. That is at its peak, where it's at its peak, so it's 80%. Planning guidelines state that we'd like to start seeking alternative sites and substation sites once our infrastructure, which is that 80%, start planning. The adjacent substations, College 1 and College 2, are 103% of the planning guidelines and 93%. So you can see we're approaching capacity where we want to start doing something there. This red circle that I drew on here is largely the area that that substation is going to serve, the urban growth boundary, and there's some of the other boundaries in here. So incorporated in a circle that won't actually serve, but was an easy circle. So you can see that it's going to take over a good portion of the Western substation to be able to relieve capacity there, and then also relieve capacity in College 1, College 2. And then there's a significant amount of growth that's been identified in this Western Wenatchee area. I don't want to make sure to highlight too is that there's growth occurring even within the established areas. So new hot tubs, more TVs. It's not as significant as brand new load, but it does have an impact. So we do see increased loads within the footprint and service territories. Any questions on that? It's just a kind of a quick background of the we're going to be talking about this site right here. So we've been narrowed in, started in with a dozen different concepts and ideas or so. I started narrowing in and ended up in discussions with WSU Tree Fruit Research. And we've progressed the discussions quite a ways and got a memo of understanding in place, and we want to see if we can't put those into some sort of an agreement on a site that we've narrowed in. We'll talk about that. We have a site criteria that we've established, and it's really it's going to serve our needs. And we accommodate to some extent, at least the community's thoughts and concerns about aesthetics and other issues. Are we reducing to the extent that we can view sheds? Is it by the transmission line? So there's some criteria that we have in place that we tried to design to and plan to. I'm just continuing on with some of that criteria. Is the site accessible by transmission? Can we get our mobile substations in there? Is there enough space available to be able to build our standard footprint? Sort of the common things that were out here. There were four or five actual little locations within the parcel of WSU tree fruit research that we have been exploring. They all range in priorities for both WSU, the community around it, and community around this parcel, and also for Richland community staff. They all have pros and cons. Through the discussions, working with WSU community, primarily to the north, Heritage Haven, really narrowing in on this location on the sea. And we think that that be able to accommodate various requirements and things for Richland PD, will be able to service that. Also check some boxes for WSU tree fruit research. And we think we're going to be able to accommodate some of the suggestions and concerns that were raised by the community to the north there and be able to incorporate that. We are not at a spot or as of yet where we've pinned down the details of the agreement. We just narrowed in on the site, and what we'd like to do then is we have a draft of the agreement. What we'd like to do is bring that to WSU and begin discussions about narrowing up. See if we can't utilize that site 1C.
Which one is that?
The green highlighted one. So here in the room with me is Gary Rice, who's been awesome at putting this together, and also Tika Sellers, who's done the outreach with us from the beginning. The team has been awesome, but Gary, can do you know how big the site is?
Yes, it's this one.
Yes,
it should be. It's about 1.1 acre, the standard green there. And that mimics our only substation. You're familiar with the only substation. We try to put together a template. So we essentially just overlaid the template to that location. Of course, there's going to be accesses, transmission coming to it, distribution going out. But what you see there in green would be like the substation. Yeah.
Is that a big enough site then to, assuming the future there's huge expansion, can that be doubled?
Yes. Yeah, that is the template we've laid out. If possible, we want to have a be able to double the capacity in the future.
Thank you, Gary. Told you to show you the statistics. Wanted to walk through a little bit of the outreach summary. Started in earnest in 2022, but various mailers, November 2022, 650 mailers went out to the surrounding community where we kind of identify thoughts and folks that were seeking some engagement. Started narrowing in on things. Had a couple of public meetings with Heritage Haven, them being the closest, had most of the interest in spending some time with us. So did quite a bit there with them. And what we want to do now, since we're at this milestone where we want to start getting more specific with WSU and see if we can utilize that site 1C that we narrowed in on, is then go back to some of the folks that we've been engaging. It's going to help us with others. Go back to the folks and see if we can't, like I said, incorporate some of the thoughts and ideas that they had and address some of their concerns and incorporate that into the agreement that we get with WSU. So there'll be some additional outreach going on with the surrounding community.
Like there's an opportunity to engage with WSU master gardeners in developing what an invisible substation looks like.
I like that thought. There have been discussions with the WSU master gardeners. As a part of this, we've looked at and worked with WSU with looking at their 20-year facilities plan and understanding what their plans are, a better understanding what their plans are, how a substation might impact those. And that's one of the things that have come up. So good thoughts. Really, this is a timeline kind of looking back and just to the immediate forward. So we hope to be pinning down an agreement with WSU here before too long, but then moving on to the permitting phase of things. So that will probably run into next year, kind of depending on what the priorities are, what the workload is. And then we'll have the site identified and a plan in place, and then we'll wait for the low growth to when we trigger and initiate construction or when there's need.
Question, Chad? Question? In developing these sites and in that kind of consideration, you're working with WCU, and you work with the city and their comprehensive plan and the county, and is that all part of the process in determining the site and future sites?
Yes, but then it becomes very formal during the conditional use permit process, which we're about to start. If we get in, get to a spot with WSU, come to an agreement, then we'll start that formal process, which is the conditional use permit. Which, yes, several discussions over the years about conduciveness, growth, understanding of use.
It all fits in with that plan as well.
We believe so.
Okay.
So just a little bit of a recap on and what's next. We've narrowed in on the site, which we mentioned. We want to inform next surrounding community of the progress that we've been making. And then, like I said, started on the permitting process. So certain aspects of that is already, Gary's already working on some of those things. The property likely is going to be acquired via an easement. And so that's just the arrangement with WSU as the purchasing NEP and our real estate have been working with us, and also Daniel Apple too on making sure we've got things in place there. As a part of this agreement, one of the things that WSU, there was some mention about a distribution line, but WSU has a distribution line that they own, operate, and maintain. And over the years, we've identified certain maintenance issues associated with that. They don't have skill sets and resources and things to be able to maintain that. It's just like three spans, four or five poles. It's not very long. It's not a very big line. So they've asked as a part of this agreement that we would take over ownership of that line. Then through the course of construction of the substation, it's contemplated and in the agreement that we would just convert that to what our normal services are. So we would convert the one service that's primary metered service into probably 4 to 6 individual services so that it would look like a standard rate schedule too. So that's part of this agreement.
Question. What would be your looking at all the things we have to go through, permitting and the county and the city and all the things we got to do in order to start on the project? What would be your best guess as the completion date for this project?
Completion of permitting or completion?
Restart of the project.
Construction.
Yes.
Well, some of that's going to be dependent on what the load is.
Right. What would be your target?
So permitting towards the end of the year, maybe bleeding into next year, we could start procurement and design and things if we wanted to. So probably a couple of years off at best. I don't know that we're going to need the capacity then, given the forecasted growth. So more than likely 2 to 5 years is probably what we're going
to be. That's a pretty big spread.
Expecting. Well, it's growth dependent. So yeah. We could
build it completely in the first phase. You try to wait for both. That's currently
that would be my recommendation.
Oh, I guess
we could choose to do a different timeline, but it'll be permitted in things by the end of the year. That's the forecast, maybe into the first part of the year. So construction could start shortly after that.
So again, with the community outreach, you know, deciding we need with community outreach and the process, that's taking a year or two, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're maybe as long as another 5 years for completion of the project. That's a 7-year process for one. And we have others that are coming as well, right? That we need to look forward to. And each one of these projects are going to be like 7 years, start to finish.
No,
we're learning.
That getting better, and some of these the timelines are chosen timelines. So like I said, the growth, the timing of which substation gets built, when it's right now, we're looking at when it's needed. So forecasting what is needed and trying to hit the timing of that. So we wanted to move those things up and build capacity before our planning guidelines determined that they were necessary, then that could be a choice that.
Well, it's certainly cheaper, wouldn't it, to get it in place rather than wait. Costs go up as time goes by. And just, you know, it's just a common sense thing. I mean, down the road, the longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, especially recently.
Yeah. Okay. I'm like,
look, Kev, this wouldn't have any impact on reducing load for Western for the other campus, which one and two that were up, their numbers were so high.
For college, for college substation?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, absolutely. So you can see in the blue outlined area there, that's the service area for College 1 and College 2. So this blue outline here, that's the service territory for College 1 and College 2.
Right.
So this new substation would, we would transfer a lot of this load that's now being served by College 1 and 2. So yes, it would reduce both Western substation and College 1 and 2.
Okay. So that's where my confusion is when we talk about waiting till growth occurs. It seemed like we needed to move forward to handle some of that. So I was just curious. I wasn't quite understanding.
Yeah, so there are planning guidelines reaching 100% at any plate, but we can get a wind time. So we get a cold load bonus. There's a lot of layers of things here, but as we reach 100% of our planning guidelines for each one of these stations, our risk profile starts to incrementally go. So we start to see things like cold load pickup. Maybe we exceed the capabilities of our mobile substations for certain conditions and wouldn't be able to pick up all our customers. So our risk profile starts to increase a little bit. So our planning guidelines are set, so we have that set at a percentage, which is the nameplate of the transformer. But we peak in the wintertime, and so we really can operate much of the infrastructure at 20%+ over its rating without decay in life. However, there's other things like cold load pickup and other things that start to come into play. So we've identified these as probably the optimal place for us to be operating our system to. And remember, our these are peaks, like winter peaks, like what we saw on January 13th. So what we're identifying here on the screen, the 100%, that's 100% of what we experienced on January 13th, where we had the coldest temperatures in 54 years. When we're operating as a third of that, or a quarter of that throughout the course of the year. So those risks only really come into play during that peak time, which is several hours.
Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, Chad. Yep, I'd like to invite Dave Nelson and Deborah Vaughn up. This is our standing agenda item for the strategic visioning process, and we've got two items, an A and B on this one, and Dave and Deborah are here for the delegated authority discussion.
I keep forgetting to check in and tell if she has any questions from that last presentation.
I haven't seen any. I've been monitoring it. Okay. I haven't seen any.
Deborah Vaughn, which is Dave Nelson. We're here to discuss the delegated budget authority, the current budget resolution that we have, and we are not asking for any action today. So while we are here, we're going to discuss the background, like I said, of Resolution 09-13433, and discuss why we need these revisions to the resolution, what our proposed changes are, and then our next steps. So a little bit of background on the current resolution. Again, it's related to budget and budget only and those revisions and how we delegate that authority. So it basically outlines the processes and the procedures that we use in the district to delegate that authority through the PUD management staff for capital and operation and maintenance budgets and budget revisions. And then within that resolution, it just basically says that we're providing accountability, transparency, and operational efficiency within the district, the PUD. And some of the background of how the process actually works with the delegation, each year the board approves our annual budget, and within that budget has the capital items list, the operating budget, and then the system budget. So you guys see those every year during the budget process. And then the resolution itself, it's delegating that limited budget authority for any revision to those items that we present to you in the budget. Okay, so as it's stated now, the capital projects, if there's any revisions that are needed up to that $500,000 to the board, is to the total project amount. Okay, so each project has a total project amount on that list, and then also it's at the system level. So if by chance the whole system goes over budget by that delegated authority amount, then we have to come to you as well for that. And then also the PUD has the annual operating budget. So if that ever went into a situation where it needed a revision over the 500, we would have to come to you as well, which in my experience in the last 18 years, the operating budget has not ever had to come to the board for that. Mm-hmm. But it's in this resolution. So more on the project. We actually monitor the budgets throughout the year daily, pretty much through commitments and reporting. And then also we provide to the board quarterly reporting on delegated budget revisions at all levels. So it doesn't matter if we had to revise a budget by $100 or $1 million. Those are on the list every quarter that we give to the board to show any revision that had been done on that delegated authority. So let's talk a little bit about why we think or why we need some updates to this resolution. The key point really is that our controls and processes are working efficiently, but the language and delegated dollars are outdated. Okay, so the role for who maintains the capital list has changed from what's in the current resolution. It states the controller does, but really it's strategic financial planning that controls that and maintains it, that capital list. Then there's also some organizational changes that have happened recently with the reorg with titles that aren't currently reflected in the resolution, so we'd like to change those. And then what I think is the most important is that the last delegation that we've done for dollar amounts was in 2003. So as we all know, everything's increasing in prices, and so the amount of delegated dollars is really outdated from what we're seeing is happening.
Question.
Yes.
What was that? Back in 2000.
There were levels of delegations, so I think In 2003, it was less than that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. In 2009, we changed it to the current levels, which is 500,000 going to the board. But I would have to look it up. I don't remember.
No, I just remember the board, I think it was 2006, maybe.
2007
was a delegate thing for $39.
That would be the original purpose,
that
contract.
Oh,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. There's a lot of different delegate, different authorities for things, and we don't always keep them all for the they have different purposes.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm sorry. So in 2003, it was less than 500.
Okay.
I just know that. If you would like me to get that number.
No, it's the county's current acre.
Sure. So continuing, why we need these updates. So again, just reiterating that the project cost for labor and materials has increased, and most significantly in the last 4 years that we've had to do more revisions than normal. As you know, when projects start, we have an amount, and then when the project starts, like you're saying, 7 years to complete a project that sometimes changes more than we would like it to. And then another reason is we need to align our strategic shifts for decision making at lower levels, just giving our authority to levels and allowing them to do what they should be qualified to do. Okay, so here we are showing our proposed changes. At the top, I'm showing the current authority levels that we have in resolution. And like I said, the top level going at 500,000, it has to come to the board. Okay, so what we're proposing is going from kind of taking away the lower levels out of the resolution and allowing the general manager to redelegate his authority to the lower levels. So kind of removing a step that everybody has to sign this resolution or sign the budget revision anyway before it gets to you, but allowing then the general manager to take that decision and decide who he wants to give what level of authority to. So in this example, we're just showing what levels what he might redelegate in his memo to. Doesn't mean that this has to be what it is, but that's what we're proposing as an example.
And
then
Deborah, can I say just one thing?
Yes.
So commissioners, this should be not new to you. This is something that we've been doing here recently under the procurement resolution, also the real estate and so forth. It's delegating directly to the GM and letting the GM make that subsequent delegation. In the past, where the board is delegated past the general manager, that's caused some confusing instances in terms of awareness up through the general manager level. Sorry.
So you're just saying that this business is usual? We're not going to.
No, the way that they are proposing to mechanically handle the delegation is business as usual. Yeah. So in the past, the best example I can come through is the North Shore substation site. Those of you that were involved in that recall that that was a real estate delegation that delegated signature authority past the general manager and actually past the managing director at that time. And then the director, Steve Currit, you'll recall, signed the purchase and sale agreement, and there was not awareness upstream to Jeff Smith or Steve Wright. And then we ended up, I'm going to say, rescinding that agreement and moving into the site selection process that you all participated in the North. So in order to avoid the delegating past the general manager and to keep the general manager and levels of management above a decision maker in that communication chain, then the shift has been made to delegate to the general manager and then allow the general manager to redelegate as he or she sees fit to those lower levels. That ensures the reporting communications up through the chain of command. You're welcome.
So then on the what we're proposing then on the new updated resolution would just be, you would just see the lower levels, or excuse me, the upper levels, the general manager from 0 to 3 million. And then proposing anything above 3 million comes to the board of commissioners for approval. And then again, just covering why our reasoning for this is that a general manager limited delegated authority streamlines with the organizational changes efficiently. And then this also will align better with our bid delegated authority of 3 million in procurement and contracting on resolution 17-14215 that he currently has. So that'll match that up a little better within the district. Then our next steps, we would like to incorporate any board feedback into the amended resolution and then present that resolution to the board for consideration of approval on June 3rd. And then just to recap what our strategic vision, business and budget planning timeline. Today, we are presenting the board delegated authority and then You'll see the next few meetings, public power benefit funding on June 3rd, business plan financial policies on July 1st, and then rate planning on July 15th. Questions? Comments?
Commissioner.
Questions?
And this is probably directed more to Kirk. I am in agreement with what I've heard. But I wanted to make sure that this does not place an additional workload on Kirk.
I would say that I'm in favor of this. And I think what it does is it allows us to simplify some of our different delegated authorities. And to your point, just in the discussion, it's confusing. We have different authorities for different actions. And so I'm all in favor of, and frankly, it'll help me in a way that I won't have to look up on my cheat sheet every time I try and sign something to figure out if I have the authority to do it. It'll help at least streamline a couple of these things and simplify them. And I think it'll actually help our staff in a big way in terms of efficiency. And you're going to hear about this. There's another budget revision proposed this afternoon. Sometimes project timelines don't always line up with board meetings and things like that. And sometimes these things have a lot of prep work and can impact projects at the same time. And I want you to know that for me, this is an efficiency gain for our entire organization, and hopefully for you as well. And we are committed to continue the informing process, that there won't be any of these that you won't know about, that these will be in your quarterly reports. So
thank you.
Dave, I need to almost apologize. I almost didn't recognize you out of time.
Part of the screen. And I think this is really good for you guys to come up with this, because streamlining and moving the policy and handing it bottom down and all the different on, and then he can delegate down as needed to the staff or whoever's in charge of the project, which leaves a tremendous amount of tape, I guess, buttons that you have to go through. So these are enough to our manager to make that decision. Civic cost, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And I think this is a great thing. Yeah. Very much.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to open it up for any public comment.
We've got one more. Part B. Sorry. This part they brought a tie for.
Good morning. Steve Saber, Higgins Assistant Director. I'm here with here to talk about public power benefit program 2024-2025. Early on the project timeline, but there were some things that were time consuming that made sense to review today. First of all, we're going to be reviewing the 2024 allocations, what's been allocated so far and what's remaining. I'll be providing some information to review some of the projects that are outstanding and may need additional or new funding. And lastly, get to speak about options to move the public power benefit plan forward. We're extending the PPP program to funding level for 2025. We're not asking for any more decisions today, but we'd be looking for some guidance to make sure we're on the right path. Public power benefit plan is a strategic priority for the organization. It's a board funded program, and we're in the last year of the 2024 planning cycle. And because of that, we will need to look at some questions. have projects, the first being the final year of an 11-year plan for the fiber program. The 2.1 million brought that up to 27 million, so that has been fully allocated. Because that phase of the program is completed, or the funding is completed, I should say. We looked at funding the next level of it, so one of the bridge funding so that we could continue moving that plan forward into the next phase. And that's $750,000 that the board has allocated for that project. The board also authorized exploration of alternatives to address this peak of reliability. It's $1 million. And the Manson Parks District came forward and requested funding for a pedestrian connection between the old swim hole, which they own, and the Manson Bay Park, which we own. And the last project funded by the board is the Fifth Street Campus Redevelopment. The board authorized $4 million on that project. Those total the 8.35 million, meaning a remaining 1.65 million in funding that can still be allocated. On April 15th, staff came forward with an option for the board to authorize funding to contribute 1.65 million in public power benefit funds for wildfire mitigation project. The board at that time indicated that there was potential support for moving forward with that project with OM funding rather than public power benefit funding. Based on the work that was done in that meeting, staff has begun drafting an interlocal agreement between the district and Sheboygan County, and that will be presented in third quarter. There are a lot of compelling benefits, both for the district as well as our community, to mitigate wildfire. This particular effort is using fuel reduction, which ultimately would reduce wildfire, that ultimately reduces smoke, reduces benefits. This type of work going forward could be funded. We do actually have the number of resources we already allocate toward wildfire mitigation. And there's likely that we continue partnerships, whether it's with the county or other agencies going forward. Because of that, staff would like to recommend that we fund that with O&M funding. And what this would mean for the board is that you will see it as part of the work plan, the 2025 budget planning process, and it would be approved at that point in time. The board has approved $2 million for connecting the service center, a trail to connect the service center to the Wenatchee Trail. As you all know, during our construction, we had some cultural findings, and those cultural findings resulted in a large pile of material that is located at the south end of this property. That's right. We would need to incorporate that into our design. Our design at one point was at 90% complete, now we would need to redo that. The large pile of material is located where the trail would have connected to the loop trail. Right now, a very high level estimate is 2.5 to 3.5 million for that project based on the material that needs to be incorporated. The earliest we would be looking at construction would be 2026, and that needs to align with the Confluence Parkway construction. Our recommendation at this point in time is to revisit that in 2025 and not fund that at this point, not provide additional funding to that. We don't know what the cost would be or the timing. The Fifth Street redevelopment, you heard an update from David Lodge just recently, and the current engineer's estimate is $4.4 million. The board allocated $4 million before we had started design for this project, and work is scheduled to occur in 2024 and 2025. We're still at conceptual design phase and would like to revisit that in fall of 2024 when we have additional information on design as well as costs.
If I'm rather using public power, but if it works.
Absolutely.
Okay.
On May 6th, the board approved a project budget revision to bring the total for the Wenatchee Riverfront Park to 11.7 million. Of that 11.7 million, 3.5 million of that is funded through public power benefits, 2 million from the city of Wenatchee as a contribution, and 7.2 million from the Rock Island Fund, which does not include public power benefit funding. Staff recommendation at this time is to continue funding as noted in this presentation. The fiber expansion I mentioned earlier, we have 750,000 allocated for bridging funding to the next phase. We would be recommending also that we not allocate any additional funding until we have more information in terms of what fiber expansion plan for the next phase. That would be revisiting that in 2025 when we have additional information about the time. Our Dryden wastewater project is nearing completion. It has a budget of $5,673,000. Of that, $2.17 million is funded through public power benefit. The remainder of the funding for that, right, for that project is through grant funding as well as interest loans. We're very tight on contingency right now. We may or may not need a budget revision, but the revision would be small, would be within the delegated authority that staff currently has. So we're recommending that we would go ahead and do a revision if needed. I think, as Kirk mentioned too, some of the timing on that is, this would be an example of one more timing is to be, but rather than waiting to get to the point, it does make sense for staff to go ahead and make that decision on that. So we would be recommending that Stahican reliability, the board to increase that system reliability. We don't have an estimate in terms of what the total cost would be. The alternatives are currently being evaluated. This work needs to be coordinated with the county, which work with the Stahican community to determine what that load might look like and what the alternatives might, what alternatives best to suit the needs of the community. We're also recommending we revisit this after alternatives have been redeveloped. Our supported employment program currently has 150,000 allocated that supports two part-time positions, probably for around 4 to 5 years, depending on the hours that the employees are able to work. Bringing this forward, because we do have an opportunity right now to consider a partnership with a local agency called Project Search. This will include a rotation of internship opportunities. The cost would be relatively low, but likely would need an increase that probably also could be within delegated authority. Our recommendation is to consider that for 2024 or 2025 funding. And we'll be bringing some more information to you as we explore what that option looks like. And lastly, we have the Walter Graham mural. If you're not familiar with the name, this is the horsepower mural that was in the Discovery Center. When we did the reconstruction of the Discovery Center, that was taken down. We're looking at cost to keep that, to restore the mural as far as maybe find a location that we could display it in our community. This one, we're looking at restoration options and costs right now, so we'll have a little bit more information for it. So likely this could be funded with 2024 or 2025. This information is to help provide some context for you, the board members, to figure out what you'd like to do with this program going forward. Just wanted everyone to know what projects are kind of out there and what they look like. This time, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Dave. He's going to talk about funding, bridge funding options. Would you like me to be Ben?
Sure. This doesn't look very exciting, slide. I'm going to provide a little bit of background on the funding program in terms of how we look at it financially, and we did set up some criteria when we established this. As you know, I mean, these are projects that maybe wouldn't meet some of our normal criteria for refunding projects to move forward on. And so we wanted to make sure that these are supported with our financial conditions that are set
still able to meet our financial metrics and targets, had sufficient funds, and so we set some criteria to determine the funding. We did, back in 2020, increase the funding from $4 million to $6 million a year, based on meeting those financial criteria. And basically, we look back and make sure that our financial results historically have supported and have provided the funding, in a sense, for making a future public power benefit contribution. And then looking forward at our forecasts and make sure that we also are going to continue to support our debt leverage and other metrics so that the public power benefit program is well supported by our financials, looking both backwards and forwards. We did come forward, as the board requested, with resolution in 2023 to approve a one-time increase to $10 million to fund the Fifth Street redevelopment. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this, but just clearly, this resolution that we did in 2020 really established the criteria and the funding for the 2020 through 2024 period in conjunction with our strategic planning, and doesn't really have any for anything looking forward in terms of the amounts or what the funding would be. So we need board approval or board action. Not today, but we are looking for the board to look at extending that strategic plan funding. If the board wants to continue the public power benefit program, right now we have the approval through 2024. We would need an amendment or a new resolution to approve 2025 funding and our forecast assumptions. We have gone back and done our analysis to prepare for 2025, just as we normally would, and have determined that the current the historical financials, as well as our forecasted results, do support the $6 million funding level for 2025 and our five-year forecast. And so the alternatives to consider would be to approve $6 million public power benefit funding for 2025 and throughout the five-year forecast, or a different amount, and direct staff to perform our financial criteria analysis for a different amount. And as part of that, one alternative we are looking at, and it's not listed here, is just considering maybe establishing it more as an ongoing program of public power benefit and a specific amount, but having the resolution provide that authority on a going forward basis.
So our next steps, we're just looking for support, feedback, and direction on the public power benefit funding program for 2025. So we will bring back a resolution on June 3rd if funding is desired. And looking for board guidance in the following projects on wildfire mitigation. Make sure we're in line with board expectations and including that as an O&M public project. And for smaller projects, just I mentioned a couple of them in there. Just want to make sure that the board is in favor or in support of staff processing the divisions within the delegated board. Those include driving wastewater, the supported employment, and the vulgar. All the ball.
So if you return to the board late summer or fall.
Commissioner, we can't hear you.
So as we return late summer or early fall, we may send to kind of a question. Really, what I'm seeing as recommendations to the board where we're at on projects, we really don't need to make a decision on that $1.6 million until summer and fall. Is that correct?
Correct. There could be some small revisions that reduce that amount based on the delegated authority amounts for the three projects identified here. But in general, yes.
Okay. Randy.
So, Mr. Berger, I'm going to need your help here. I think, I'm not certain, memory out.
Oh, God. What it used to be.
Yeah. Well, but you and I were both here when PPB was started. And I always think that it's to inform our future, we need to look sometimes at our history. And I'll tell you where I'm going with this, Karen. And it seems to me that when we established the $4 million annually, we didn't just pull that number out of thin air. At that moment in time, it was based on roughly 10% of our net profit of the preceding years. Yeah, and I recognize we're going through strategic visioning, and that's going to change how we look at public power benefit. But I also recognize that our profitability, if you will, want to call it that, has changed somewhat since we were at about $40 million a year. And so if we continued on with a train of thinking of what do we as a commission want to do with public power benefit, I just think it's valuable for all five of the commissioners to have that context, that at one, a moment in time, we based it on 10% of what we were for our profitability. That's a significantly different number today than what it was 10 years ago. So I just tossed that out as a discussion starter for the next few months. And yeah, good presentation, by the
way. Well, okay. You know, I think you're right, Randy. I mean, there's a methodology around that. I'm not sure exactly how it started. You guys probably know more about that and remember that. But times have changed, and now we've had a chance to go through this for multiple years with the public power benefit program and how it works and how we allocate. There's a committee that is established to review potential projects and make recommendations to the full board, which I think is a great process. And I think we need to kind of maybe look at ways of expanding this and or modifying, I guess is a better word, of the project, of the fund. And, you know, if we're kind of look at this as money just hanging out there, and what are we going to do with it? And so we're looking for little places to, you know, to put this, and whether it's through delegated authority or wherever, there's a fund here that we can grab and use for specific things. Rather than look at it that way to spend it or lose it, I think that it would be a good thing to consider a way of retaining. I think Commissioner Arthel brought that up in previous board meeting. Can we establish a fund or bank it, as you will, and retain it for future future projects and add to it? If that way we don't lose it, it's there. And maybe the project this year is with something of a real benefit. Well, let's carry it forward to the next year and fund and add to it with potential new funds, and then be able to allocate those dollars in a more meaningful way of projects that really benefit the community. And that's what it's meant for. It's for the public, you know, special projects. And so I would entertain that we set up a fund, sort of a commissioner's fund, public power benefit fund that we can add to and draw from, and it's there all the time. And then I don't know if we have to do a resolution every year. All we would have to do is appropriate the funds to the account, so to speak. And I may not be explaining that exactly the way you guys would look at it, but that's kind of how I'm thinking of moving forward, just the modification of a program that's very beneficial stood the test of time. So just one commissioner's opinion.
Thank you.
Eric? Thank you, Carter. Good comments. Good comments. I remember the fund and its creation, and if I remember correctly, the terminology that was used to let's crawl before we walk and let's walk before we run. And I think we've reached that point. We're ready to strap on our running shoes. If I hear correctly what you're saying, Carmen, and also Randy, this has been something that we've approached very conservatively. We wanted to make sure that these dollars would be allocated effectively for the benefit of our customer owners. These dollars were designed to make a project possible where there's not a direct link to the return on equity for an investment by PB, such as maybe replacing poles or replacing air conditioning. But yet have great value back to the residents of our county who really are the owners of this hydropower community and should be the beneficiaries of the great risk that was taken early on to get us to where we are today. So personally, I would echo, pardon, that having a opportunity to roll over unused, unspent dollars into the next year's budget and also setting up a public power benefit account that would fund when certain conditions met with respect to surplus revenue, unspent surplus revenue. So that would be, from my perspective, a task that staff could consider to bring as an option towards the board so that we can really go forward with this program and continue to fund it, bring value to the community.
So with that, I'd just like to summarize, that gives us some things to think about and give some direction for staff to provide that assistance as we move forward. And then also we have, as part of that discussion, we have $1.6 million that then we're not based right now, we're just putting that on hold and having that as part of our further discussion. That summarize this morning.
Yes.
Can I add one more thing? Just to clarify, we're prepared to come back as early as the next meeting on a resolution that would extend the PPB program. And what I'm hearing here would indicate that there's an interest in extending the program beyond 2024, loud and clear. So I'm thinking what we might do for the next meeting, if it makes sense and consistent with your summary there, is we bring back what we heard would be the elements of what would go into a resolution extending the PPB program at the next meeting. And then you could choose to act on it then, or you could choose to wait another meeting, provide more feedback, and we come back again with another resolution. I do think it would behoove all of us to have a resolution extending the program sooner rather than later, so we can count on it for budgeting purposes, if that makes sense.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kelly, any comments or questions?
I agree with everything.
Okay. So at this moment in time, I will open it up for public comment. I don't believe we have any public here, so at this time, we will recess for lunch and be back at 1 p.m. For this session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting, I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices you have today. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item, please raise your hand physically or electronically. Notify us that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us.
Remove approval.
Do I have a second? Second. Hold on a second, sorry, there we go. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Reminder.
Resolution 12.
Thank you. So let's move into Resolution 13.
Okay, I'd like to invite Chad Rispin up. I think it's going to be mostly Chad this afternoon again. So welcome. This is a resolution awarding specific lines to General Pacific Incorporated of Fairview, Oregon, rejecting bids and authorizing the 2025 transformer purchase and supply. Bid number 23-13135 be obtained by negotiation for the remaining lines. And when it says lines in the resolution, not to be confused with conductor, it's actually lines in bid solicitation. There's a number of line items, transformers. So, Chad, take it away.
Thank you, Kirk. Good afternoon. Distribution transformers have been, say the least, a roller coaster ride the last 4 years. Really appreciate the board's support. We've been operating on a emergency resolution, allowing staff to negotiate directly. We're finishing up receiving some of the last few transformers. We believe we have enough transformers to get us through 2024, because the continued volatility of that market in both lead times and in costs, what we're hearing is it's labor issues and raw materials. So it seems to be stabilizing a little bit for some folks, some companies, but anyway, so staff wanted to get back onto a contract. I felt like that was the best, most stable thing to do. So put out the contract for essentially 2025 transformers, about 500 units, something like that, at an engineer's estimate of $3.7 million. So as Kirk said, the staff's gotten pretty creative with legal and purchasing's help here. There's 32 different transformers that we purchase. And so we've invited bidders to bid on each one of those line items separately, hoping that we could pick and choose the best delivery times and prices, right? For prices, monthly, right? Prices for each one of those line items. We received three bids, and the only responsive bid was for three of the line items, which accounts for about $20,000 of the $3.7 million. There were various things, but mostly the costs that came in were over the engineer's estimate. So after much discussion and deliberation of whether or not going back out, there's some indication from some of the manufacturers that things have eased since we put this together several months ago. And so our purchasing group and engineering is asking for permission to be able to negotiate the other line items with these, with the bidders. We feel like we might be able to get actually under the engineer's estimate. So there's some indications of that. So that's what this resolution is requesting.
Is there any indication that this all started COVID? Any indication that in the next 2 or 3 years it's going to settle down again or not?
Trade shows and various conversations on asking that same question. Do you think the response is? I hope so. We see some indication that some companies, I think, that have positioned differently, that there is some settling of that. Like our power transformers, for example, it's easier to get a big power transformer than it is a distribution transformer. For some reason, that market has got extra hard. I think a lot of it is the turnover that they're struggling with, and they're hoping to get their hands around. So I sure hope, Mr. Smith.
Chad?
Chad, are there more domestic suppliers that can fulfill our need? Is that where we're looking, or are these coming internationally?
So some good things that have come out of operating on this emergency resolution is staff has gotten pretty creative in finding who all makes distribution transformers. And with a couple little tweaks, started carving out a pretty good relationship with a company called Cantrans, Canadian Transformer. We've gotten good quality products from them and lead times. So there's a couple other examples, but that's an international one that runs to the north. It'd be cool to partner with them and companies that are there. So that is one example that has come out of this. There might be an opportunity with them with some of the with some of this bid.
Questions or comments? Let's go ahead and take these one at a time. I have a motion to accept this resolution.
I would make such a motion.
Second. Any discussion? In favor of the resolution, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Item number 14.
This is a proposed budget revision. This can get confusing. There's multiple projects in within a project. So this is one element of the North Shore substation. You'll see another element of the North Shore substation at the next meeting. Chad?
So this portion of it is the circuitry or the distribution system that ties to the substation into the distribution system to be able to provide the load and the capacity to the also relieve in similar to the West Nash discussion that we were having this morning is to relieve nearby substation. Given its location, there was a significant amount of distribution work that was done, and there were agreements to do all that underground. So there has been a lot of underground construction, and all looks really good. The initial estimate here, we recognized in March that the estimates to actuals and the burn rates were high enough that we were at risk, and with the number of changes that was occurring. So we did some analyzing and identified that it was probably going to hit somewhere about 20% over. We've changed that. There's a number of things. Material costs were higher. We've had more labor. We hit more rock. There's just kind of a smorgasbord. We've actually changed the route in a couple of locations. Lots of rock removal for installing big bolts because these are the heavy circuits that come out of the substation. So we identified this and went through the chain of approvals last month that it was signed, and I completely dropped the ball to get it on the board's agenda. And as a result, just late last week, when I looked last time, it was about 7% over allocated. The actuals were over the budget amount. So not the outcome that I am looking for. Have some suggestions. Believe that the scope of work and the costs are within. We caught this project early in our processes, and I think that's a good news story side of it, but I just didn't finish. So we didn't get it on the board agenda. You heard a proposal this morning. I didn't know actually that was going to be recommended, but that would have helped, I think, in this case. However, that doesn't, so maybe supportive of what's being considered there, but in this case, I knew we were at risk of going over, and I just can't tell you. I just forgot to get it on the board's agenda. So, regret that. Be working on some lessons learned there. Obviously, that one is. Maybe some adjustments to the
to the policy, but then also some adjustments to our processes to tighter coordination with our business office, who always does a really good job of making sure that these things get carried through our engineering and project management. Now it's called our project delivery group. Construction manager and project managers do a really good job of paying attention to make sure things get followed through. One of the great values that they have is something assigned to the projects. In this case, we did not have one assigned to the project, so we're just executing with engineering and operations. Don't know if that would have affected things much, but project manager always does a really good job of dotting I's and crossing the T's. So a couple of my thoughts and ideas there. Any questions?
I would just like to add too that, you know, this isn't a sole personal responsibility. This is a shared responsibility as an organization that, and I think it's important for me to accept responsibility as well, because as you notice, this isn't the only time we've had this instance come before the board recently. And so it's a systematic issue. And just, I want you to know that I'm committed to work with our team on how we can help to try and find these things before they get to the point where we are now. There is another one coming next board meeting for the substation project. It's not at the stage this one is. It's not having at the overspent stage at this point, but just want you to know I am committed to continuous improvement here. And I think it is a symptom of a lot of our staff that is working on a humongous capital project budget right now. And those are the areas where we're having trouble staying on the track of these things. But no excuses, just know that we are committed, and I don't want Chad to take sole responsibility for this. It's a team responsibility that we can get better at.
Wait till after we go, but I do have another question I want to ask you about. I'm sure. Anything else?
I just got one question. You know, the cost overruns in this project, I mean, it's been a long process. Let me get it going. I was here when we started it, and we came back, and now we're finishing it. And it just seems that we went through a learning process with this one that we hadn't had to do before. And a lot of it was involved community involvement, the process around that, to find the location. I think we became more sensitive to the public and the needs and the aesthetics around siding these transmissions. And when we do that, there's a learning. There's ways, I guess we have a problem with the budgeting, because these things come up as we're building the project and giving the instruction. And my concern is, you know, how much of that impacts overall cost when we have the public so deeply engaged in this, and we're so responsive to every little thing that goes on, trying to mitigate the impact in an area. And I look at this site, this is beautiful. I don't see how we can have a better site in order to not impact the aesthetics of the community surrounding the area. So can you just talk a little bit about that? Does that add, what kind of cost does that bring into a project when we're that response? I mean, we're pretty good at trying to mitigate these things, and every time we do something, there's a cost associated. I don't know if we're fully prepared to deal with that. So
yeah, I appreciate that. It has been a learning experience. Other parts of that I think of too is there really wasn't any great locations. There's a hillside, lots of elevation. We knew that we were going to be a fair distance away from the load center, which means either a lot of transmission or a lot of distribution work. We're going to get the station tied in. In addition, what the things that you had mentioned too, going forward might be a healthy exercise to identify some of the things that we're doing that are related to improving the substation or any other infrastructure for that matter, for the reasons of aesthetics and concerns, maybe keeping track of that, understanding what that looks like. Because there's a significant portion of this, and the scope of work of this thing was quite a bit bigger because of its location. It wasn't flat. It was a lot of costs went into excavation. A lot of cost went into excavation. A lot of cost went into the distribution portion of this. So can't remember many projects being over $1 million for just tying in the distribution system, and this one was four. So the order of magnitude is quite a bit higher. Part of it is driven by things that you had mentioned for sure and lessons learned there, but also just given unique geographic features of that area, we knew that it was going to be challenging no matter what.
I remember the first meetings that we had with first team, put that out, and that's when everything kind of public, and you selected this, you know, location because of how less of the cost it could fit in with the transmission and the lines and all those kinds of things. So I just think it's important to point out that, you know, due diligence was done in order to save dollars for the district. I remember that. I mean, this is part of my memory. And it wasn't until the public got involved and said, wait, hold on, we didn't like that there. So we have to recognize that because of that is added cost. We had to find a different location, like you said, it would cost more. It wouldn't be the preferred site if we could just pick a site and say, this is what we want to do. We had to be responsive to the public needs. And so there's a little bit of responsibility on that, you know, it costs money to be responsive to the public. And to do those things, there is a gotta pay for it. So I guess looking forward to these next projects that you have and what we've learned, and maybe there's ways that we can, streamline, I guess, and reduce those costs knowing what we had to go through with this one. I hope that helps a little bit in you taking responsibility of that. But I think the commission and the district, we all take responsibility in that. For making a mistake, but being responsive to the public. So that's how I view it. Any comments or questions? I have a motion.
I would move approval of resolution number 14.
Not a resolution.
Budget revision.
Pardon?
It's the motion.
It's a motion, not a resolution.
Pardon me, I'll pull back up.
Okay.
I would move to increase the total project budget for capital project DS220013 North Shore Substation Getaways in the amount of $750,000 for a revised total project budget $4,082,934 with no change to the overall 2024 distribution.
I think I heard Kelly make provide a second. Is that
yes,
true?
You did.
Thank you, Kelly. All those in any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. And before you, can you give me an update on you were talking about some extra things that we're doing with landscaping and because of a concern. Where are we at on all that?
Yeah, we're in contact with a couple of folks in the Chelan Hills area that have got direct view sheds. And coming up with some different ideas and moving around some of the landscaping that was not planted. But I would call it tuning things and trying to be responsive and not having much impact on the scope. There was a light that
until they sent us a picture in the middle of the night with the aurora borealis behind it, we realized we should probably do something about that, which is not a big deal. So I would just say that there's some little things that are going on there that we're doing some fit and finishing, adding in some slats, maybe to break up some of the view shed things. I think there's a lot of landscaping that was done, and that's going to take time to grow. So unfortunately, that's going to take a while, but there's some things that we can do that we're trying to understand and be reasonable and listen to make some adjustments.
Okay.
Thank you.
Kirk, we're on to manager items.
Okay, I'd like to invite Brett Bickford up. He's got a couple of items. Thank you, Chad.
Good afternoon, Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. The first manager item is a follow-up from last commission meeting where I shared that we had an unexpected failure on our Unit U1 at Rock Island Firehouse 2. That was an exciter failure. The armature had moved on that, and I discussed that we were going to be going in and looking at the other units. So this is a report on that. So we went and looked at five other units that were operating. We did find a few loose bolts out of the 28, but we didn't see any movement of the armature in any of those other units. So those units were returned back to service. And so we're continuing to make repairs on U1. I think those will be done by the end of June. And then as we have time, we will go into the other units. And we can only see one side when we go in for the short outages. But we'll be going in and making sure that all the fasteners are tight and all the welds that are supposed to be there and other things that help keep fasteners from loosening up are all in good order on the rest of the units. Any questions on that?
I don't want him to just gloss over that because this hasn't been the outcome of most of these things when we've gone back into an inspector. Seriously, we find a lot more, and then we recognize we have a much bigger problem. So just really thankful for everything the team has learned from when they identify these things. They want to make sure that we're not having those, latent or hidden issues that we don't know about, and to actually take the time to go understand and see what might be out there that we're not aware of. And so appreciate them doing that. And takes a whole team to schedule an outage like that, unplanned, and but these things are really important. And in this particular case, we had a great outcome, which we haven't had for a long time in these situations. So,
yeah, and hats off again and credit to all of our staff. Great communication and coordination with power marketing, with the plant staff, central maintenance staff, engineers, lots and lots of people involved to help do the inspections quickly. Also, at times when it wouldn't impact, you know, supply and delivery of power to our power purchasers, or we wouldn't have to buy power also to cover that. So the second item is at Rock Island, Firehouse 1 near Spillway. You might have heard about ongoing cracks that we've been finding. And so we resolved cracks a couple years ago on Pier 1. And in that process, we identified that in the future, we wanted to go through and open up all the expansion joints across the deck. And so we've been working on that project and we're nearing completion, and that will be done this fall. When we made those openings on the expansion joints on the downstream parapet wall, we have about a 4 to 6 inch gap that we can visually look into and see. And what we saw there was the parapet wall is the concrete structure that sits above the deck that has a crane rail on it. There's one on each side of the deck. And on the downstream side, you can look into that space that we've created. And when you look at the end faces that were cut, you can actually see some very large cracks that go from the top of that parapet down to about the deck level. And so we've been investigating those and reporting the condition of those with Portland Regional Office of the FDRC with our dam safety staff. We've done investigations. We see that cracking is pretty substantial and it warrants pretty rapid response to try to repair those. We've been doing mapping with UT, ultrasonic testing, to kind of understand the extent of that. And so we decided that we should be very careful about how we operate the gantry cranes on that. And so we have done some, we've worked with operations to limit operations of those cranes unless we have engineering staff to help supervise what's happening. But because of that situation, we believe that we need to undergo repairs pretty immediately and try to get those done by the next fill season. So we're working on a contracting plan now to see what's the possible ways that we can execute that work completed by April of 2025. So we've looked at the different options. We don't have contracts currently that we could utilize to like start within the next month or so. And so it could be that we come up with, maybe we would have to ask for an emergency to be able to put together contracts and negotiate with a contractor and an engineer to work together to come up with these solutions and kind of real time implement solutions to help get that work done. Thank you.
That's it for manager items.
All right. Down to item 16, commission items. Let's start with a special meeting. And if anybody would kind enough to make a motion.
I'll make a motion to reschedule the board workshop from Friday, May 24th, 2024 to Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024 at 9 a.m. at the Confluence Technology Center, 285 Technology Center Way, Wenatchee.
Second. Any discussion? And just remind me, this was the one that we postponed.
This was a single topic, energy markets. So
this is the,
this was one we haven't gotten to yet. It was going to be this Friday. Yeah.
Commissioners, all for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Commissioners, do we have any other items? Gary.
I just wanted to share that this last week I was able to attend the NWPPA annual conference in Salt Lake City, and there were several very good programs. As well as opportunities for networking at this conference. One of the most fascinating, and I'd be happy to share with any of my fellow commissioners that would have an interest, was a presentation by Major General Bowles, who is a supply chain and logistics expert. And we've just heard about transformers and how difficult it is to procure some of the equipment that we need so desperately. Anyway, he had several comments to make, some of which I've already shared with Kirk, in ways to help create greater efficiencies or to acquire those materials, make sure that they're here in time, ahead of time, to meet the needs of the organizations going forward. Of course, the illustrations he had, tried to tie his experience in the military and being in Afghanistan and Iraq and the supply chains and logistic issues that he dealt with, supplying the military equipment to the utility industry. And believe it or not, it was a really great parallel. He made some great parallel and some good comparisons. So be happy to talk with anyone about some of those findings.
I would like to just say what a ninth event last Thursday was for the district celebration and picnic here. I just saw people enjoying their, taking a little bit of time off to celebrate parking lot, people were having fun and coming away with some great gifts, raffle gifts. And so anyway, I had a great time.
Say one thing?
Yeah.
Okay, I have an event on the 11th, and it's a personal thing, but we shall reserve a shelter on Cheyenne Falls, my park. What a great job the team does, and very long day people need to shelter. It was clean, it was all prepared, everything was just set up so nice. And we had a bunch of folks come from Okanagan and the OMAC there, and they couldn't compliment enough on the parks. The bathrooms were absolutely pristine and shiny. And yes, you know, you always hear that you can eat off the floor. I mean, this stuff was just, I wouldn't recommend.
You don't recommend that.
Shining and clean, everybody was so pleased, and they took that back with them. And how nice of Shining Beauty. That's it.
So it's not every day you get to compliment me.
Maybe you know. It's impressive. Really was.
I have a second comment I'd like to make, and that is that last Saturday I had an opportunity to make a presentation at the unveiling and ribbon cutting of the new mural that's down on the building. And I have to say that just in your experience, Bergen, the public came up to me afterwards and were very complimentary about the look of that building and the mural that is there. There was a great deal of comment about the old Bridge to River mural, which is no longer in the community, and how this now takes that place. And if you haven't had a chance to go down and take a look inside the building, one of the best things, from my personal opinion, I may be a little bit biased, but there's a beautiful sign there that says, brought to you by benefit of the hydropower community. And I just think we can't repeat that enough in letting people know that that's where this benefit comes from. My hand was getting tired from shaking his hands for thank you for the PUD. So I think, Justin, again, you guys did a great job. The organization is really very highlighted when the ribbon cutting was done. Community is very appreciative.
Anything else?
I want to get left out here. I went to the same event you did down in the back parking lot, and I forgot it was last week, but what a fun event. You know, I think all of us commissioners, since we moved out here, started to realize how many of the employees here that we really didn't know. And last week was just another step. I sat down and had lunch with a couple people from IT, and they are excited about what they're doing in their job there. And it's fun to talk to employees that are sitting there saying, we're excited to be able to make a difference to the people of Chelan County. And that's what they were saying. And so I had fun with them. And it's also tough to know that because we're commissioners, we get more easily recognized than us doing the reverse. And it's, you know, it's 800-1 odds that I'm going to know somebody or something along that line. But it was great, and for whoever's brainchild it was, and whoever put it together, tons of thanks. I'm guessing I know. Justin, you're okay.
Dave Bosch and the project team, for support, definitely team efforts. Thank you for that as well. Here's the mural that was just finished last week and unveiled. And just a friendly reminder that that's a PUD building, PUD property, an agreement, a formal agreement with the Roan Paddle Club. And so we participated in this project and got to design this side of the building. The other portions of the building were designed and paid for by the Roan Paddle Club. A great partnership.
Let's move on to item number 17, follow-up on delegation of action items from prior board meetings.
Okay, and I'd like to first just thank you, commissioners, that were able to make it to the event last week, and not only just to make it to the event, but actually put the aprons on and went to work, and just appreciate you being there. And it means a lot to the employees to see you there. And it was, and I heard the same thing from employees that you all just said. Just a lot of them had a chance to meet each other. You know, and they're in close proximity, or at least in a similar building, that this facility offers that opportunity for them to meet each other more so than our whole facility. So thank you. Got a number of items here to update you on, if you'll bear with me. Some progress on some, and then we've had quite a few action items that we've added to the list since. I wanted to cover some items that were completed from previous meetings. One of them was Andy Wendell had provided information on whether the vegetation at the North Shore substation is irrigated. That was provided on May 3rd. Ron Slaybaugh was providing the risk value of the Patuxent Water District acquisition. That was completed with the acquisition. I was going to provide information on utilization of appointments with staff in Chelan and Leavenworth offices, and that was completed on May 3rd as well. And then from the May 3rd workshop, we had a number of items that were making sure we don't have fall through the cracks. Rebecca was going to set up a system to track commissioner recommendations on training events for future consideration. Her and I actually talked about that one last week, and so it might help a great deal if one of you could work with us on how far you want to go with that. There's we could go a bunch of different directions with that, and just want to make sure we're meeting the need there. I think what we gathered from that workshop discussion was that you were interested in feedback from things that you're all attending and whether or not they're good things for board members to go to in the future, and some way to track that. I had one to arrange a security orientation at the service center with the board, which we'll follow up on. And then I also had another one to provide a draft strategic directive to outline acceptable risk tolerance for procuring substation land. We talked about that one today, and we talked about that at the last workshop. And then these next two will probably be tag team between John and Justin. To investigate upgrades to the Chelan office to support the community's use of the auditorium, as well as the staff needs, and then to develop a way to collect data to help us assess whether the service center is doing what it was intended to do. And then Eric had one, even though he wasn't there, he inherited one, and that was to work with the Leadership Research Institute to help with the contract for board governance training following the Nebraska Public Power District site visit. And I can speak and say Eric is, I think, done with that. So we'll show that one completed next go around. And then from the May 6th board meeting, Justin was going to provide a staff recommendation for the 2024 public power benefit unallocated dollars. You saw a piece of that this morning, and we will come back late summer, early fall for the rest of that. And no new action items from today.
I have for next additional. Is there any additional any public comment?
You know,
state your name and your address.
Yeah. Oh, I'm actually but you guys talk about getting comments positive from the public. And I just want to say that you guys are in the every day I come into your meeting, you talk about the service you want to provide the public and the rate page. You talk about things you do with the rate payers. You do it any of them. I don't just hear it in this board, I hear it down in the lobby. So you walk the talk in the deepest speaking. I spread the word too. I work in this building. And what you do for your citizens, and I want to say too, that was amazing. Never catered food. So kudos to you all. I've been waiting to say this. Today was a good day. Thank you.
Do we have any other matters of general business necessarily to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will recess executive session to discuss the legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district court's board is like or is likely to become in party or and or legal risk is authorized in statute for
45 minutes.
45 minutes. Executive session. No votes were taken and no decisions were made. I call this meeting to adjournment.